Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 97.9 The Wren. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Sunday morning wake-up call. Here our guest today, UVA President Jim Ryan. Jim serves as the ninth president of the University of Virginia. He's a respected and accomplished educator and legal scholar. President Ryan earned his law degree from UVA, previously served on the School of Law faculty for 15 years. From 2013 to 2018, he acted as dean of the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And President Ryan began the role of UVA's presidency in August of 2018. President Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So we're going to talk about education in the college level, as well as a few things from your point of view. Let's just jump right in. Can you discuss mental health for students, especially how UVA is offering assistance? Because I sat down and preparing for the show today, fourth-year students were the last to experience a normal high school life.
So mental health is an issue, I would say, approaching, if not already at, a crisis level in higher education. And I know what you mean about fourth-year students. I have a son who's a senior in college and another who's a junior in college, and they have not had the typical college experience, and in my younger son's instance, the typical high school experience. The truth is that the mental health issues were increasing before the pandemic, but they've been accelerated by the pandemic, and students reporting feelings of anxiety and depression have climbed quite a bit over the last decade, and even more acutely over the last couple of years. At UVA, we take a tiered approach to dealing with the issue. So the first tier is really an array of programs that are really about prevention. So they're peer counseling, there are classes, there are programs on healthy habits, resilience, and the like. And the idea there is to help students cope in a way so that they won't have to seek counseling. But for those students who do need counseling, and there's been a pretty significant increase in demand over the last 10 years, more than double the number of cases. We've increased the number of counselors. We also have contracted with a telehealth service. So every student now has up to 12 free virtual counseling sessions. And the new Student Health and Wellness Center at UVA has increased our capacity to serve students. And then in the third tier is to address real emergencies and students who are in real crisis. And there's a number that they can call 24/7 and instantly get connected. They can also walk into the counseling services at Student Health and Wellness Center. But the reality is that the first tier in some respects is most important, because I don't think you can solve this problem by simply adding more and more counselors, because you're constantly chasing an elusive target. And so some of the programs that we've been focused on have really been about this first stage. And that's why it was important to us that the Student Health and Wellness Center, that wellness was a big part of it. So it is not your typical student health center, but it is one that is filled with programming for students to help on the social emotional side of life.
Have you seen a growth in use over the last 2 years from your first year here at UVA?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, this trend was going in an upward direction before the pandemic, but it's accelerated over the last 2 years. Absolutely.
But when I guess I didn't make that as clear as I should have, because, but when we took, by opening the new services, and yeah. because in daily life for a student, aside from the regular stress, which is impactful as even without COVID, the stress on a college student, for many people are aware that that is increasing. And then you throw in remote schooling,
yeah,
restricted gathering, social isolation. Do you think that COVID has driven this up and therefore made this an upward spiral? Or is this just the basics of where society is as a college student under normal life?
So I think it's both. I'm not sure how to explain it differently, but there has been an increase in students seeking counseling services over the decade before COVID hit. But that trend has accelerated over the last 2 years. So in some respects, the increased demand for mental health services reflects a general trend in the kind of pressures that students are feeling in college today. It's also, I think, I mean, part of this is a reflection of the fact that seeking assistance for mental health issues has become destigmatized to a certain extent. So some of the demand that you're seeing is because students who in the past would not seek out the help are seeking out the help. But I don't think that explains the entirety of the increase in demand. But when you add in the factors that are associated with enduring a pandemic, including social isolation, it's not surprising to see that cases of anxiety and depression have increased. And that's what we've seen here at UVA, and that's what you're seeing across all of higher education.
UVA President Jim Ryan with us today for the first half hour of our program. Mr. Ryan, you are quoted talking about leadership and said we should strive not to simply be great, but also to be good, recognizing that in the not too distant future, it will be impossible for a university to be truly great if it is also not good. Can you explain a little more about that? And then tell us, what ways can UVA improve in being good?
So there are a couple of things about that that I think are worth noting. On the one hand, I think that the way that universities are assessed is going to change. And you're already seeing this in terms of what you might call measures of return on investment. How well are you preparing your students for a successful and fulfilling life? What kind of value are you adding to their experience, and what kind of contributions are you making to your community, to the Commonwealth, and beyond? And so part of what I mean by being both great and good is that it's about being excellent, but excellent for the purpose of advancing the common good and for the purpose of preparing your students to advance the common good. The other piece of it is that I think that more and more students, faculty, and staff want to be at a place that they feel good about, that they feel lives its values, that they can believe in wholeheartedly. Because I think when that happens, people feel like they're at a place where they can thrive, and they feel like they're at a place that is actually trying to do some good in the world and has a sense of purpose. So I think it's both about how universities are going to be judged, and it's also about attracting and retaining the very best people who I think are going to want to be at institutions that they can really believe in. If you're thinking about UVA, I mean, I think this means making sure that we are adding value to our students' experience and preparing them for a productive life after they leave here. I think it is about living our values, which means in part being a good neighbor to the Charlottesville and Albemarle County region. It's about not just talking about the dangers and the risks of climate change, but becoming more sustainable ourselves. I think it's just a sense that part of what we do here as an institution reflects our values. And in some respects, we pass those along to our students, not just through our classroom, but by how we act. The more consistent we are in that respect, I think the closer we'll be to being both great and good.
Let me follow up on that if I can, because when we talk about being good and reflecting values, all of which are things I want to invest myself in as well. But the Pew Research Center recently determined that partisanship is the dividing line in America's political attitudes. It surpasses the differences in age, gender, religion, race, ethnicity. So how can you keep this from dividing UVA students in a negative manner if the goal is being good and reflecting values, when that seems to have its own murkiness if we're talking about partisanship?
I believe that there are still common ground, and there are still common values that transcend partisanship. But I also think a big part of it, honestly, is maintaining and supporting efforts among our students to have open and civil conversations with those with whom they disagree. So I think that, part of the way that we can advance the common good is to help prepare our students to engage with those who are different from one another. I mean, college campuses are among the most diverse places in the country along all sorts of dimensions. And preparing students to live in a diverse world, part of that means helping them become comfortable with engaging with those who have very different backgrounds and very different views. So in a sense, I mean, part of our mission today, because of the state of our democracy, is preparing our students to buck the trend of just dividing into partisan camps and thinking more about, well, where can they find common interests and where can they find common ground. It's not simple, and there's no magic bullet to it, but it is something that we have been attending to and trying to offer as many opportunities as we can for students to be involved in conversations with those with whom they might not see eye to eye. And I think that's an increasingly important part of preparing students to be citizen leaders, which is ultimately a huge part of our mission.
Well, I hope that makes listeners smile, because it makes me smile. UVA President Jim Ryan with us today. President Ryan, I'm interested, was there a topic that wasn't on your radar until a student or a faculty member brought it up to you?
That happens all the time, actually. So some of it with students is, just learning about life on grounds, learning about challenges or opportunities that they're facing. And sometimes, I hear this if I have lunch with them, which I did a bunch this fall when the weather was nice out on the lawn or on a run. So one issue that came up that we are trying to address is how funding for food at events is handled. And a number of students said it's really difficult for us to host events if we're not offering food, especially events where food would be the centerpiece. And I didn't realize that was a big obstacle. And so we've been working with students to try to figure out how to address that. Same with a host of other issues. It's easy if you don't make an effort to feel like you understand student life. But the reality is, until you spend time with students and really talk to them and more importantly, listen to them, do you begin to really grasp what day-to-day life is like for students. And that was true during the pandemic. So we had handed out, this is a small issue, but an example of what I'm talking about. We had given out PPE masks and the like, but realized when we heard back from RAs that we didn't provide enough masks. And, that's a really simple thing, but if you don't listen, you're never going to learn about it. And I also had a bunch of conversations this fall with students about issues ranging from free speech to the honor system to Thomas Jefferson. And I learned every time I had those conversations. And with faculty, I learn something new every time I speak with them. And one of the things that I learned that was really heartening, and if not, I think, especially well-known outside of UVA, our faculty are well known for being great at research and caring about teaching, and all of that is well deserved. But they're also incredibly collaborative too. I would have lunches regularly and still do with faculty and ask them about their work. And to a person, they would talk about work they were doing with someone either in their department or just as often outside of the department or outside of their schools. And I tend to think an interdisciplinary approach to research in particular is often the most promising path to tackling really big problems. And I was just incredibly heartened to see how much that was happening already at UVA.
I'm curious, you go running regularly. Do you have a favorite UVA sport to watch or attend? And I recognize that as the president of the university, you are a fan of all and you support all of them.
Right.
But do you have a favorite sport, maybe from when you were younger and before you became the president, so that really gets you worked up?
So I don't have a favorite sport, to be honest. In part, it's because I grew up playing a lot of sports. I'm a big sports fan. And so I try to get to at least, one game of every team during the season. I enjoy all of them. I mean, I'm not kidding about it. I mean, it's hard to beat the excitement of a packed JPJ or a packed Scott Stadium or a packed, Kochner Stadium, just in terms of intensity, and excitement. But I've seen an incredibly exciting volleyball match and wrestling match and field hockey game, although I'm still trying to understand the rules of field hockey. So some sports I can follow more easily than others. But I just think athletics are a big part of UVA, and I think a really exemplary part of UVA. Our student athletes are amazing people, as are their coaches. And I think one of the best things about the athletics department here is they absolutely want to be successful, but they want to be successful and win in the right way. And they have really great values, and that's a testament to Carla Williams, our athletic director, and to the remarkable coaches that we have.
Yeah, Carla Williams has done a fantastic job. Whether it's you yourself or members of your family or those in your immediate work environment, do you get feedback? I'm curious on your thoughts towards fans who are negative towards players, teams, coaches during difficult times after a loss, during a losing season, and whether that's because you're immediately aware of it because you go to a Facebook fan page or someone in your immediate family or work circle does that. And I'd like to get your feedback on that.
So I don't spend a lot of time on social media, so I don't see it. I think I will sometimes hear about it from my kids who are huge UVA sports fans. You know, I think that it's just part of the game, to be honest. And I think our coaches, it's not pleasant. And I can sympathize with them because I get those sorts of emails myself. But you realize, you know, that's just part of the business that you're in. And, you know, they're grown-ups and take it in stride. It's not pleasant, obviously, but it is part of what you're signing up for. And, you know, I always tell people, and we'll tell coaches this sometimes, you know, on the bright side, you get a lot of unsolicited and free advice.
Yeah, come on down, you guy from the stands. You're welcome to run the team.
Some of it reflects just the passion that UVA fans have, which is intense, and you know that has great aspects to it. But you know, the flip side is if you're really passionate and you think someone's doing a poor job, you're likely to be more vocal about it. You know, you mostly see silence when there's indifference, and there's not much indifference when it comes to UVA generally, which mm-hmm. is why, you know, I hear from alums who are passionate about a topic, and whether they agree with me or not, I'm grateful for the fact that they're interested. I mean, that's way better than alumni who could care less about an institution.
UVA President Jim Ryan with us for a few more minutes, two half-hour segments of the show today. President Ryan, you went on Face the Nation and had a brief discussion about COVID and said that universities should be managed like cities, if I understood that properly. Can you discuss that for a few minutes?
I don't think I was saying that they ought to be managed like cities as much as I was saying they really are like cities. I've never managed a city, but you do have to take into account that in addition to teaching and research, which, you know, that's at the core of what we do, we have a health system where people go for medical care. You talked about athletics. We host sporting events, concerts, theater, dance. We have places where people live, where they eat, where they study, they exercise. We have libraries, research centers, heating and cooling plants, groundkeepers, and a police force. And we have a student population that's over 20,000, many of them 18 to 22-year-olds. So it is a little bit like a small city, and if you are president, you know, you have to keep, to a certain extent, track of all of those things because they're all interrelated and they're all important. And so in that respect, I imagine it is a little bit like being the mayor of a small city.
How about the ever-changing state of the Virginia gubernatorial administration? How would that affect UVA?
Well, you know, this is my fourth year. So I started shortly after Governor Northam began, and we're really early into Governor Youngkin's administration. So I don't have an awful lot of experience. We had a good relationship with the Northam administration, and I'm optimistic that we'll have a good relationship with the Youngkin administration. I think both governors recognize that UVA is a real asset to the Commonwealth and would like to see us succeed. The biggest influence that a governor will have on the university is somewhat indirect but important, and that's in appointing members to the Board of Visitors. So right now, all of the members of the Board of Visitors were appointed or reappointed by Governor Northam. And then this summer, Governor Youngkin, late spring, Governor Youngkin will be able to make three or four new appointments. It's still early in the administration, but I've had the opportunity to spend time with Governor Youngkin, and like I said, I'm very optimistic that we'll have a really productive relationship.
And then we never have enough time in interviews of this sort and conversations. At UVA, I wanted to bring up income disparity in college education. How did you turn opportunities for lower SES families into success stories?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the first part is access, and the second part is support. So with respect to access, we're one of only two public universities in the country that guarantees to meet 100% of financial need, which was surprising to me when I learned that. I didn't realize there were so few public universities. There are a number of private universities that guarantee meeting 100% of financial need. But I also think access is making it clear to families who might think the UVA is out of reach, that it is in fact within reach. And so one of the first things we did after I started was to make it clear that families from Virginia whose income is less than $80,000 a year would come tuition free. Their kids would come tuition free. And those who earn less than $30,000 a year would come without having to pay tuition fees or room and board. And this was an increase in our financial aid, but not a significant increase in our financial aid. It was just the fact that the grants that we would typically provide to families at those income levels were enough to either cover tuition or tuition, room and board. But to me, it was a much easier message to families who might be thinking, well, I don't know how financial aid works exactly, and I can't guarantee what my contribution is going to be, to be able to signal really simply that, you know, if you're at these income levels, you're either not going to have to pay tuition or you're not going to have to pay tuition, room and board. So that's the first part of it, is making it accessible and affordable. And then the second part of it, which is equally important, is providing the support to students when they're here. And a lot of that happens just naturally through the relationships that students have with faculty here. And we're blessed, really, by having faculty who don't just care about teaching but care an awful lot about students. but it also happens with the various supports we offer through student affairs and through advising and through a number of student groups that offer peer support and peer advising to first-generation and low-income students. So it's about opening the doors wide and then making sure that students have what they need to be successful when they're here. And when I started, I said, and I still have this goal, that I would like UVA to be one of, if not the very best place for first-generation students. Because I think part of our obligation, part of what it means to go back to the idea of being great and good, is that you're providing educational opportunities to students who in the past might not have had them.
University of Virginia President Jim Bryan with us today. Jim, thank you so much for joining in. Best of luck.
Rick,
at my school. Yeah, it's my school too. Take good care of it.
I will do my best. Thanks very much for having me.
Next up, PVCC President Dr. Frank Friedman will be with us for the second half of our show. Hang tight. And thanks, everybody, for being here with us once again. Sunday morning wake-up call. And now we are with Dr. Frank Friedman. He is the fifth president of Piedmont Virginia Community College and serving since 1999. While being established in 1972 as a non-residential two-year institution of higher education, President Friedman's leadership has brought about enrollment growth of 25%, addition of multiple programs from healthcare to technology to high-demand careers, along with the construction and acquisition of the space to meet the needs of these students and programs. President Friedman has announced that he will retire from the position after graduation this May 2022. Dr. Friedman, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, sir. As a graduate of a four-year institution, can you tell me what is the perception of a community college? And is it accurate?
You know, it's a very complicated, it's a simple question with a very complicated answer. And I'll try to simplify it a little bit. There is a public perception, and it has existed for quite some time, that a community college is not as good as a four-year institution. At one time, we were actually called high schools with ashtrays when people smoked in the 1960s. Those beliefs are starting to melt away. 40% of all undergraduates in the United States attend a community college. And in most communities, the community college is well-known and really is something that people really respect. And I must say that I've worked at six community colleges in my career, and the image and reputation of Piedmont Virginia Community College is far and away the best of those six in its own community. And that's very gratifying. It shows that we are providing the education that the people of our community needs, and that is recognized that by the people who live here. So, yeah, there's still that in some circles, a kind of elitist view that community colleges are, as the saying goes, the low person on the totem pole of higher education. But that's starting to melt away.
So my understanding is that Piedmont Virginia Community College, or PVCC for the locals around here, meets multiple needs. It's almost, I guess you would say, the challenges are more of a trichotomy. You've got attempting to help people do a two-year plan to then move on to a four-year school. You've got people who only have a two-year plan and will be fully satisfied in completing their two-year graduation. And then folks coming in to take specific classes, I guess what was originally mentioned as high-demand career classes, and be perfectly satisfied and pleased with the outcome of that. How does PVCC meet the needs of these wide-ranging requests and demands?
Well, I think you've stated it very well. The fundamental reason that community colleges exist is the belief that every individual should have the opportunity to reach their potential through the power of education. You know, many of our universities, University of Virginia, obviously, in our own community, it's highly selective. The students who will be admitted are the cream of the crop coming from high schools all over the state and all over the country. And that's wonderful. We need that. But what about everybody else? What about the students who we all know who during high school, they were more interested in girls or in boys or in cars or in sports, and they didn't really apply themselves, and they were, mediocre students, not because they weren't smart, but because they didn't apply themselves. Should we hold that against them and not give them an opportunity when they're ready? And community colleges are there to say, when they're ready for education, we're ready for them. And that's why so many of our students are in their 20s and 30s, 40s. You know, we have students who have been out of high school for 20 or 30 years, and maybe they've been working at a good job, but maybe that job went away. Maybe technology replaced that job. What do they do then? In America, they go to a community college and they develop skills that employers want and are therefore willing to pay for. And that's the basis of community colleges. We call it access. We are access institutions. PVCC admits everybody who has a high school degree, a GED, or is over the age of 18 and can demonstrate adequate reading, writing, and math skills. We take everybody. You know, many of our great universities, Ivy League or public universities, they will brag at how many students they turn away. We think we're doing the work that needs to be done because we take all comers and try to move them forward to transform their lives through the power of education. So it all starts with that belief set. And once you have that belief set, you build an institution recognizing who your students are, what supports they're going to need, and how the institution can help as many as possible achieve their goals and achieve their dreams.
PVCC President Dr. Frank Friedman with us here this half hour of the program. Dr. Friedman, you mentioned taking all comers and moving them forward. I would think that there are multiple challenges to keeping students in school today. If you're taking all comers, there must be some need for some form of remedial coursework at times. There's got to be challenges in balancing life with schoolwork or debt with schoolwork. And I guess sometimes they all come together, life and work and debt with schoolwork. What does a community college like PVCC do with these issues?
Well, you have enumerated the greatest challenge that we have. when you take all comers and you're meeting your access goal, a line we like to use, we don't want that open door to become a revolving door where they come in and they go back out. We want to emphasize, and we do emphasize, student success. And that means, yes, for some students, they are going to need less than college level work to start to bring them up to a level where they can succeed in college level courses. You call that remedial. We call it developmental. Yes, sometimes that's needed. But we also emphasize that we have a writing center, we have a math center, we have tutoring available in every subject, and all of that is free to our students. It's, well, I guess it's not free. They paid their tuition. They now get that. And we build that support and make it as accessible as possible. So it's not just during the day, but it's in the evening, and it's on the weekends, so that our students know they have support and help to not only master a specific subject, but to learn how to study, to learn how to be a successful college student. We also provide a great deal of counseling and advising to help students develop their career goals. We have a career center that works on that. And then to develop the pathway to get from where they are to their career goal, so that they understand what programs they will need, what courses they will need, how long it will take, whether they'll need to transfer and earn a bachelor's degree. So many of our students are first-generation college students. They don't have parents who went to college, and they don't have anybody in their household who understands these nuances about higher education. So we need to provide that assistance to the students so that they can formulate goals, formulate a plan to get there, and then, and we emphasize this to them, there is no shame in asking for help. That's why we're there. We are there to help them succeed. And again, we build the college around that. I'll give you, for instance, if you attend PVCC, chances are you will never, and I emphasize never, be in a class with more than 35 or 40 students. We feel that by keeping classes small, we get a more personal experience between student and teacher. The teachers have more time to spend with the individual students, and our students need that kind of support. You know, a freshman at most universities, they're going to be in classes of 200 or 300 students for the first year or so. Our students are not ready for that kind of exposure to learning. They might not have the discipline. They might not be able to thrive in that kind of an environment. So we don't do it. Sure, we could make a lot more money if we did, but we're not there to make money. We're there to help students succeed.
I am curious about the Biden administration has spoken about making community colleges tuition free. It's not happening on any current bills or budgets, but it's been spoken about. And I'd like to get your thoughts on the pros and cons of that eventually happening.
Let me put it in a context, if you don't mind. If you look at the 20th century, you know, the 1900s, the United States became the world leader as an economic power. Why? One reason is free public education for everybody from kindergarten through grade 12. That doesn't happen in every country. When the United States moved to free public education, we created a very highly productive citizenry, and that fueled the economic growth of the United States. But today, if grade 12 is your endpoint in education, it is unlikely that you will have the skills that are needed in today's world, where we're in a knowledge economy, where technology is so important. If high school is the end of the road, for so many individuals, that means they're going to be in low-skill, low-wage jobs. Now, that's not always terrible, and it doesn't doom them to that. But for many, that's as far as they can go. So what do they need? They need post-secondary education. They need to be in a program where they will develop the skill set that is needed to be valuable to an employer. So if you look at it that way, by making the community college free, I think we would be extending what has been so important for the United States, making K-12 free. And in today's economy, we need to extend that to the first year or two of post-secondary education for the good of the individual students, but also for the good of our economy as a nation, a state, and a community. So that is why I believe that first it started with President Obama, and now President Biden has picked it up, that the free community college movement would be very good for our nation. And I'm sorry that it does not look like Congress is going to pass anything like that anytime soon.
Can you talk about some of the partnerships that PVCC has with some of the four-year colleges in our area?
Yes. About two-thirds of our students are interested in using PVCC for the first year or two of a bachelor's degree. So they already know that. It's about two-thirds of our students. They might not know exactly which university they want to go to, although some do, but they know they want to go on and earn a bachelor's degree. So that is a significant part of our student enrollment, and it's our job to make it as easy and simple as possible to transfer to the university and not lose the credits that they have already earned at PVCC. I can't tell you that we are 100% successful in doing that, but we're darn close, especially with the universities in Virginia. We work with them. If you go to their websites, many of them have charts that show exactly how one of our courses will be applied when they transfer. And we also have what's called guaranteed admission. What that means is if you complete, and you must complete, our associate degree in a transfer program, and if you earn a grade point average that is specified by the university, then you would be guaranteed admission to that university. For instance, at the University of Virginia, if you complete our associate degree and you have a 3.4 GPA or higher, you are guaranteed you will be admitted and enter as a junior or a third year. Each university sets that GPA themselves. Some William and Mary, I think, is a little bit higher than UVA. Most of the others are a little bit lower. And that's wonderful in that a student has that guarantee. And they can't be turned away by the university just because they have so many transfer student applications. So we work very hard to try to make it practical, simple, for our students to transfer. We have one individual on our counseling staff. His title is transfer counselor, and he is an expert in every way, shape, and form about what it takes to transfer to any of the universities in Virginia and some, you know, outside the state, although obviously with thousands in our country, he can't know every one. But about two-thirds of our students transfer in-state anyway, so that's where he concentrates. And he is in touch with their admissions department at JMU or VCU or Longwood or Radford, anywhere. He works with them very closely to make it easy for our students to transfer. And we get a report from a group called the National Student Clearinghouse every year. And in a typical year, 2,000 of our students leave PVCC and then the next fall enroll at a university somewhere in our country. And to us, that is a really very important sign that our students are transferring successfully and being able to move on successfully. In Virginia, we even get a report of all those students who transfer, how many actually earn their bachelor's degree? And it is over 70%, about 75%. And that's very good because of native freshmen at universities, only 60% earn their bachelor's degree. So our transfer students are doing better in terms of finishing up and earning that bachelor's degree. Another really good sign that we have helped prepare them for success.
Piedmont Virginia Community College President Dr. Frank Friedman is with us today. Dr. Friedman, has there been any focus on mental health issues for students in general, and then in any more detailed context since COVID has come become such a major part of our lives?
Yes, very much so. I think we all know that for the past 2 years, our lives have become much more stressful. And this is the case for our students. We're all concerned about our own health. We're concerned about the health of our families and our loved ones. For so many individuals, they have concerns about their jobs. For a while, their jobs disappeared. Some jobs have come back. Just look around our community. How many retail establishments, how many restaurants have gone out of business during the COVID? And you know, what has happened to all their workers? The stress level has ratcheted up for everybody in our community, and our students are no exception. So let us go back a few years. It was the policy of the Virginia Community College system, which encompasses the 23 public community colleges in Virginia. It was the policy that we did not do mental health counseling, that we would refer to the Community Services Board. For us, it's Region 10. Just this past fall, in recognition of the high stress level our students are experiencing, that policy was rescinded, and the policy allowed each community college to enter into a contract with a telehealth mental health provider. And PVCC, starting right around January 1st, entered into a contract with an organization called Timely MD. And this provides mental health counseling for free for all of our students. Now, it's not mandatory, obviously, but we publicize it widely with our students. It's totally confidential. We don't know which students are seeking that help. They have a phone number where they reach out, and they can get very brief counseling that Timely MD calls Talk Now, so that if they have an immediate issue that they need some help with, or they can arrange for scheduled counseling sessions going forward, depending on their need. And all of this is free. The college is paying for it, obviously. And we vetted a number of these telehealth organizations, and we were most impressed with Timely MD, with the quality of the counselors they provide. Every single one of their counselors is a licensed counselor, and that was very important to us, that they weren't just, you know, taking someone off the street, giving them a crash course, and calling them a counselor. They had to be licensed, and that was very important to us. And we get data from them, how many students are accessing it. And in the first month alone, I think we had 60 or 70 students access it. And those numbers are just going to keep going up. So, yeah, that's very important for us. Because, again, we are there to help our students succeed, which means reach their educational goals. And if they have financial problems, we have a student financial resource center to help give them financial counseling. If they have mental health issues, we now have this service to help them with their mental health issues. If they have academic issues, we have the tutoring center and the learning center and the math center and the writing center. That's what I mean about building an institution dedicated to student success, not just for elite students, but for every student.
Dr. Friedman, we've just about 2 minutes left. So let me ask you, what will you miss most upon retirement, and what are you most proud of?
Good questions and difficult questions. I've been president at PVCC for 23 years. In those 23 years, we have had somewhere between 150,000 and 200,000 students. What I am most proud of is helping those individuals achieve a better life. And that is what really matters to me. That's why I'm in this business, is to help students achieve their goals, achieve a better life, and therefore have a better life for their families. What will I miss? I'll miss my colleagues. I'll miss the faculty and staff at PVCC, who are wonderful, dedicated professionals. And I will miss the students, because I interact a great deal with the students, and I will miss them, although I hope to come back after I retire and do some teaching at PVCC. So hopefully I'll spend some time with a smaller group of students, but still spend time with them. We're a people business, and what I'm most proud of and what I'll miss the most are the people.
Piedmont Virginia Community College President Frank Friedman, after over two decades, in his third decade as president, he'll be retiring after graduation in May of 2022. Dr. Friedman, thank you so much for your time today, and best wishes going forward.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.